that tries to get it done so quickly that it's borderline illegal. My name is Scott.
Ooh. I'm Frank.
I'm Paul. Were we off sides there? Wait, should we huddle about this?
No, it was a substitution thing. So it's like I didn't make it all the way onto the numbers. So technically, it wasn't a real substitution, according to some people. We will be talking tonight about the Patriots game because, well, it's the Patriots game and we have to talk about it. We will also talk about three stars this day in Bills history, the Chiefs game, the rest of the season, and anything else that comes up. Why don't we start with our initial thoughts on the game? I will say that Frank will go first.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. That's awesome.
My initial thoughts on the game are barf. If you had told me that you were going to hold the Patriots to 20 points and be tied in the third quarter with them, I would have thought the Bills would be in good shape to win the game. Like, really, and it was sort of just, God, it was just like a frustrating game left and right. It was just like futility, and not just futility from Buffalo, kind of futility from New England. Like, I kind of, part of me wished that they just put us out of our misery, like, really frustrating from the officiating standpoint, which, even if we're not going to say that, you know, they quote-unquote cost the Bills the game, because I don't know that that would be right to say, that was just a gross game for the officials. It was just slow and wrong. It was, like, the epitome of all the bad things that can happen. So my initial impressions are just kind of barf. It feels like I wasn't expecting to win. I wasn't worried if they would win. And yet, strangely, they end up making me mad that they didn't win because of just the frustrating nature of the football game.
They
so
pull
that's
you
my,
back in.
They do. They suck me back in just enough to, like, punch me in the gut. And it was just like, that was just unnecessary. So that's my initial thoughts on the game.
Okay.
I was more of a steady dry heave. The thing that kept me from the full-on vomit was really just the, wow, what a performance by this defense. We have watched Tom Brady decimate the Bills for season after season, and I have never seen him throw the ball into the ground like that and get hit on whatever it was, 20 out of
12 or 13. Yeah.
It was absurd. So the play of the defense, the play of Stephon Gilmore, the general, you know, just what they were able to do to keep the team in the game, that doesn't change. And also, it's in two games against the Patriots this season, lost by a total of 15 points. That's usually what they're trailing by in the first quarter of right. The blowout game that happens annually. So those keep me from, those are reasons for optimism, but as Frank noted, boy, and you know, we'll talk about this later, I'm sure, but just some of the, all the plays they left on the field, all the opportunities that were there to pull off an upset, put yourself in good position for what's coming up to be the biggest game of the season, let's be honest, and really just come in and swing into the Chiefs game. And instead, it was a bizarre game. It was strange to watch. If you were not a Bills or a Patriots fan and you watched that game, I feel for you. But it's always disappointing to lose to the Patriots. It's always disappointing when you don't get a lot of sleep because you stay up to watch it. And, yeah, I look forward to talking about this game now. I'm kind of glad we're podcasting right after the game, and then we never have to speak of it again.
Agreed. And we will get back to some missed opportunities right after my initial thoughts, which are that this was it was interesting because I thought, as I was not here last week, I was not able to fully explain how I thought this game was play out, but I think if people were paying attention to the final score I picked, which is 42-35, this was not exactly what I was expecting. I thought that given the Patriots, I mean, obviously them losing Edelman, I think, I think that probably clearly hurt their offense. I thought that their defense, however, had been kind of exposed a little bit the last couple weeks as not being quite as good as they have been. I think our offense, you know, with everyone kind of hitting on full cylinders, I think was going to have some good opportunities to get some things done. And clearly it was the exact opposite of that game. It was a very much a possession-to-possession, field position, not a ton of big plays, where every kind of little thing mattered to a certain extent. I think there's a couple reasons for that. Obviously, the Edelman injury. I think our defense, I'll just say it, I think it was probably the best game that they played. I mean, to be fair, yeah, they had better stats in the Indianapolis game in terms of turnovers. You know, obviously they've given up fewer points in games, but when you go against New England's offense, you know, anytime you can hold 20 points, you have to count that as a win.
And really, like 17, because three of those points come from special teams turning the ball deep.
Credit to Ryan for Rex Ryan for completely changing up the defense. He said it in the first game that they were trying to, you know, confuse Brady by having more people drop, and I think he said, to hell with that, let's just put him on his back. And, you know, again, did it work every time? No, it's not designed to work every time. It's designed to work more often than it doesn't, and then it allows you to then, when you drop people, you're still confusing the offensive linemen so that those three rushers who are now rushing, they're not as convinced that there's the only three guys, and now everyone's kind of got their heads on swivels. Obviously, the injuries on the Pats offensive line hurt there as well. And then, obviously, Tyrod. I want to get to Tyrod a little bit later. But I will say, like, my final thought on this initial thing was that, you know, this is the thing that the Pats have always, to a certain extent, been able to do, is they can win a lot of different ways. And that's one thing that the Pats reporter on ESPN pointed out, and something that's definitely true, is that, you know, they can win this kind of low-scoring game. They were able to run the ball a little bit. I was surprised how much they were running it. I thought they would have some more balance than they did the first game, given the injuries in the wide receiving core. But I was a little surprised they had success that they did, and I was surprised at how effective their defense was. Admittedly, with some help from Tyrod, I think the Bills are competitive in a number of different types of games. But I don't think that they're at the point now where they can win all types of games. But the fact that they're at least, you know, competitive in both kind of the high-scoring, you know, throw-them-downfield kind of games and the low-scoring ones, I think that bodes well for the team's future to a certain extent. Paul, why don't you, if you have some specific situations that bothered you the most about, like, the first half when the Bills could have seized control, why don't you elaborate on those now?
I would absolutely love to do so. So let's go back to that first half, and what I, you know, really want to kind of focus on is the missed opportunities here. We'll start at the very beginning on the Patriots' first drive. Really, you know, I could even start on the Bills' first drive and note that, you know, some questionable play calls, a missed block on first down, whether it was by Chantrell Henderson or Jerome Felton, on third down, depends on who you blame for that. But opportunity to control the ball right off the bat, couldn't do so, three and out and punt. Then you have an interception wiped out on a holding call on Corey Graham. Rambo would have given the Bills field position at the 27-yard line. They say they don't move the ball a single yard or 2 yards. Carpenter hits it from 42 yards, God willing, and you've got a 3-0 lead instead of, you know, a Patriots drive. You have the two, not one, but two underthrows to a wide-open Chris Hogan. Chris Hogan should have had about 180 yards receiving yesterday. And if you think that as an exaggeration, look at some of the plays he was involved in that weren't complete. I think he finished with 90-some-odd yards. The first underthrow resulted in incompletion. You can certainly claim pass interference could have been called on that play.
That's definitely pass interference.
Yes.
Definitely pass interference. They called it later in the game. It was the exact same play.
Right.
They're throwing ball, receiver coming back to it, DB didn't look around, pass interference every time, unless you're playing New England in New England, and then it isn't.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm like, we could have mentioned that during our officiating segment, but if we went through every bad call, this podcast is going until Thursday. So we would have to go literally play by play. So, you know, that was one underthrow. The other underthrow was caught by Hogan. It was a 31-yard gain, but it would have been a touchdown if it were on target. LeSean McCoy on the one pass that Tyrod threw deep, which he hit on target, lost his focus a little bit, started to bobble it, and Patriot got his hand in there, and that was the end of that. Then after that play, Carpenter missed a field goal. I give him a mild mulligan on that, simply because in the same direction, Gostkowski missed it in almost the exact same fashion. I believe Carpenter's kick was about 6 yards shorter. His hit the upright, whereas Gostkowski's just sailed wide, so that said, missed opportunity. And then the worst of all at the end of the first half, the Corey Graham out in the open field. And yes, Mario Williams should have dropped back into coverage, but Corey Graham has him. If he keeps him dead to rights, that's a worst, you know, that's a field goal drive for New England. Instead, you're going to half tied at three. And mind you, these are all just from the first half. These don't even go into some of the things in the second half, which I would go into, but I would easily have gone on beyond the point of anyone being interested in what I'm saying.
The other constant missed opportunity, if this is the game we're playing, is twofold. Sammy Watkins really missed an opportunity to draw some pass interference calls. He didn't kind of stop and come back for the ball, certainly on one play that I can think of, down the sideline. And they certainly missed opportunities to give him the chance to get it by throwing more to him. And then the other thing that was missed opportunities was Tyrod Taylor kind of all night. He really sort of, he hits LeSean McCoy, which, you know, McCoy's a running back, and that's actually kind of a tough catch for a running back, even though he probably should have caught it. But how many times did he underthrow, how many times did he EJ Manuel a throw and underthrow it by about 4 yards, and the guy had to stop and come back, or there was no real play on the ball? It was kind of funny that the first throw after he dinged his shoulder was the best throw that he made all night to Chris Hogan.
Yeah, it was like Hulk Hogan taking the other guy's finishing move, and all of a sudden it springs into life.
Exactly what I thought of. I just thought of Tyrod Taylor shaking both his fists and like walking around the ring and getting pumped up, Hulk, as we used to call it, Hulkicized by the crowd. And it was just sort of the scary thing, of course, after that was, though, like suddenly he didn't throw the ball more than about 2 feet for the rest of the game, which we're going to get to in a minute. But those are like two really big missed opportunities there that kind of kept representing themselves. And so in one way it was encouraging because those plays kept showing up. Like, there were open guys all over the field, right? Like, there was opportunities to win the football game, and it's the drawback, of course, is like they weren't capitalized on. So at the beginning of the game, I wasn't too worried about it. I was actually encouraged. They were going to be tied at halftime, and they actually looked like a decent offense that just needed a few breaks. And, they didn't capitalize on the few breaks they actually, had a chance at. So,
it is frustrating. I'm sure there are probably, this is where everyone in New England, and I'm sure we have a lot of Patriots fans who are listening to us.
Oh, yeah, we're really big in
Boston and Cambridge.
Although there were a decent number, I will say this, there were a decent number interacting with me last night on Twitter, and they were not dicks. So that was such a nice change of pace from the second week when the only Patriots fans who interacted with me, which were three, total dicks. Total dicks.
In Boston,
language they were.
In Boston, our podcast goes under the title Maybe Next Ass Kicking. I think that's what we
maybe next century is what they call it.
Right, maybe next
Maybe next Brady retirement.
Right. next millennia.
The thing about missed opportunities, I mean, and they would say, obviously they had, Amendola, basically kind of not 100% running free. Darby obviously gave up on the play. There was someone further down the field who could have made the play. Of course, there was also someone on the New England who could have blocked him.
Right.
They would kind of point to that one, and I'm sure there's probably half a dozen other plays where they would say, well, we just missed Gronk on this one or that kind of stuff. So it always cuts a little bit both ways. I think you're right, though, Paul. There were a couple of them where it did kind of seem like, there was really one or two things that could have really changed that game. For me, I mean, the pass interference on the Hogan thing, like, that ball's at the one. We're not perfect on the one, but it's probably at least a three. And the other one I think about is it's hard to put it on Carpenter, and I'm sure there were things earlier in the drive that probably would have given him a better chance at kicking that. But if he makes that field goal with 2 minutes left, not only does that put us up 6-3 at that point, right?
Yep, yeah. It would have. 6-3, probably. Well, possibly six, going to the half, depending on how the Patriots
6-3, and that's the point is that the Patriots then they don't get the ball on the 35 or 40-yard line.
Right.
They're kicking it off at the 20, and presumably Jordan Gay can get it so that the Pats start at the 20. Now they've got to go a little farther, and, maybe James White doesn't have quite enough room to get it in at the end zone at the end of the half, or maybe the Pats, don't quite put it together. You never really know how that plays out, but I think there was definitely a chance that we could have been going in a half 6-6 or 6-3 vice 10, 3-10 kind of as it was. We had a lot of...
Oh, I'm sorry. One more missed opportunity.
Yes.
Duke Williams.
So many. Oh, Duke Williams.
Just
that was a play after. He's not that bad. He's not a terrible safety. But that
nobody—it's one play a game. He seems to just fall asleep, and I noted like,
and it's always like the nuclear option when he falls asleep. It's not like he falls asleep and, like, man, it's like a 15-yard gain. It's like it's like a touchdown and two people get hurt because
literally on the
president's daughter gets kidnapped. Actually, I shouldn't say that because the president has daughters now.
But yes, the president's sons get kidnapped.
Right, I was thinking of Bad Dudes when they at the beginning of that video game where it just is like you press start and this guy says, the president's daughter has been kidnapped. Are you a bad enough dude to rescue her? And, like, that's it. That's the setup for the whole game. It's the best setup ever. So that's what I was shooting for. But since, we actually have daughters in the White House, I better just gonna shut up now. I blame Duke Williams.
The death glare by Stephon Gilmore on that? Like, he just glared at him. Oh, it was... Oh.
Cut him in half with his lasers from his eyes. And we didn't obviously mention... Arguably, it's not really a missed opportunity, but obviously the biggest backbreaking mistake of them all was Leonis. I mean, do we need to say anything?
Do you think so? You think that was the biggest mistake? It was a big mistake.
I mean, it was a huge... I mean, if you want to talk about, like, win probability before or after...
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it was only 3 points that they cashed in, but, you know, that's the thing. The way things were going, the offense was so... terrible, you could say, well, nothing really would have changed the point of that. The way that game was going, we were never going to come back.
I think the bigger mistake was the missed tackle on the touchdown, honestly. Like, that to me, that was like, they were still like 25, 30-ish yards out, and they've been stopping him short all night.
I guess I forgive a missed tackle more than I do a fumbled punt, especially when it's like, that's, you literally know, like, how it happens. And
right.
Yeah, I think I agree with Frank, but I want to take Scott's side on this and say that, remember what happened. The Patriots came out at the half, drove, got stopped, missed a field goal. Bills, out of holy hell out of nowhere, first drive of the half, go down and get a touchdown.
Right.
The Patriots, I think they went 3 and out or about 6 and out on that drive and punt. So this was, everything was in the Bills' favor when McKelvin punted that ball. And all of a sudden, bam, Patriots get 3 easy points and they... have the lead the rest of the game.
Yeah.
If one were to believe in things like momentum, this would be a linchpin momentum swifting, switching moment. So
if Frank and I ever have a physical brawl that you guys hear about, it's because we start talking about momentum.
Right.
and if it's with Scott, it's going to be Whaley, and I'll be dead very quickly, so it'll be a short brawl. Frank will kill me slowly. Scott will just destroy me.
I am sadistic like that. That's true.
Yep.
So we had a ton of Facebook comments on this game, and we're going to spread them out. The one that kind of got the most interest, I think, was EJ or Tyrod on the final drive, and that was Steven's question. Tom said he would have put in EJ, remembering, obviously, all of us here were in D.C. in 2012 when RG3 was basically destroyed by the Seahawks. I don't want to say ending his career, but just setting his career from something to nothing, basically. And that also saying that EJ is healthy and Tyrod was clearly not. I would say that you never really know how bad Tyrod is hurt. I would say that Chris Hogan throw, again, as previously pointed out, was easily there. I don't think, there might have, Gruden was saying there wasn't anything on the balls. He got the ball to Watkins on the fourth down call that obviously the refs blew a little bit. And it's not like Tyrod was playing great anyway, so I don't want to put too much on the injury for there, but nonetheless, what do you guys think? Would you have brought in the 6-6 or 6-5 righty out of the bullpen and hadn't finished that game off?
I think that's such a hard question to answer without really knowing Tyrod Taylor's health situation. You know, you got to make that split decision on the sideline, and if you ask him, like, can you throw the football, and he says, I can, then I think there's something to be said for, trusting Tyrod Taylor, giving Tyrod Taylor the opportunity, who's proven quite a bit, despite a disappointing game this week with the Bills. I think you got to give him the chance. Now, what you might have done, and I thought about this, was if they had properly called that last fourth down out of bounds and they had 2 seconds left and you had to air it out to the end zone, I might have brought EJ in just to do that, because he is healthy and you've just got to kind of like, okay, we're throwing one bomb to a spot, and, let's do that. But on the final drive, I don't know.
That's a fair answer. I would say that's the exact same argument that whoever, was it Shanahan was coaching the Redskins at the time, was like, well, I asked RG3 and he said he was fine.
Right.
And it's, you can never, you know, always the players.
Yeah, but that was like a whole, like, half. Like, at some point, like.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, but I would say that Tyra was getting beat up a little bit the whole game.
Yeah.
To some extent, too. So, anyway, Paul, thoughts?
I refer to this as the Terrell Troop conundrum. You know, your coach asks you if you're healthy. You are in the midst of trying to prove yourself in the starting lineup, in the career, in establishing your NFL career. You are probably, in almost all scenarios, going to tell your coach, yeah, I can do this. I'm good enough, when, in fact, your body is slowly dying. So I'm just really saying that, though, to be contrarian, because if I'm Rex Ryan, you know that Tyrod gives you the best chance to win. He's telling you okay. You remember the E.J. Manuel Jacksonville disaster? You're going to leave him in. And I think I would if I were Ryan, too. Whether it was the right thing to do or not, I don't know. And I think Frank brings up a great point that was in my head today, too. Like, I think if they correctly call that Watkins play, you bring in Manuel just because I trust him more to heave a ball 53 yards in that scenario and get it there. And I, on a disturbing question, and we'll cover this when we talk about the Chiefs game, I wonder if Tyrod was just not feeling well the whole game, and what we saw was just the exacerbation of that injury, because we have not seen him underthrow the ball like that, like he did yesterday with such, you know, consistency. Normally he hits a few of those, but, you know, I don't know. My answer to is I don't know. I think if I'm Rex Ryan, I listen to my QB and I keep him in, even though that might not have been the best move.
And it might be a different answer if you're down 13 or 17. If there's no, you know, you might put EJ in and he's like, all right, let's get out of here. But if you're only down a touchdown and you can get to overtime, and, you know, like, then a lot of things can happen. You can open up the game for yourself a bit. It was a tough spot, and you know what? He didn't send him back in with a concussion, right? Like, so I'm happy, like, from that regard, that I don't think anybody's health was compromised. I think they, you know, it was a typical kind of football injury, and he was able to pick up his arm and throw the football somewhat. And so, you know, you give the guy a chance to gut it out, and he certainly didn't look bad enough that I felt like, you know, he was like total disservice to the team.
Yeah, I honestly, I agree with you guys. I was kind of playing devil's advocate a little bit just to make sure that I was making sure we had something to talk about, obviously. But because it's a podcast and it's important to have things to talk about. But no, I mean, I think it would have been a little different too if it was like a leg injury or something, or a hip injury where it affects his escapability. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, like, if your shoulder's hurting, that you don't feel great running, I'm sure. But at the same time, I don't feel like you're going to be putting him in more danger, because he can still run away if it gets down to it. Not that he was playing all that well to begin with. That's a slightly different category, because obviously EJ wasn't playing at all good in any of the games, really. So, talking about Tyrod, I don't think we know exactly what happened last night. I think some of it, from my perspective, was the rush. I think that for some reason, maybe he thought he needed to do a little bit more. The underthrows were obviously very evident. To me, it seemed almost as if he was trying to get the ball. How do I say this clearly? He was worried about the rush, so he wanted to throw it early, but he still wanted to hit the deep throw, so his solution was to put more air on the ball than he's ever put on the ball before, as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it ended up completely throwing off what has been basically one of the strongest suits from him, which was hitting those deep fly patterns. That obviously, you know, I don't want to, and this is the question I wanted to pose to you guys. If Tyrod plays better, if it's the average Tyrod Taylor, do we win that game? And I looked it up. The average Tyrod, if you compare, including the Pats game, because I didn't want to do the stats, if you include the Pats game, the average Tyrod would have 11% more completions. Each completion would be about, or each attempt would be another yard and a half per throw. He would have a little less yardage, but, you know, you don't know how that yardage is kind of one of those things where it's obviously, if we're coming from behind, you don't really know how it's going to play out. He would have another touchdown passing, and he would also have about 30 yards rushing, which he had basically none last night. So if we get an average Tyrod Taylor, to a certain extent, he's been a little bit feast or famine this year, so you can never really know for sure. Is that enough to win that game? And I will start with Paul.
Well, I would say the average Tyrod holds 6 to 9 ties, depending on width. Sorry. Okay. Joke is out of the way. Yes, is my answer.
That one was right over my head. I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, because a rod that holds ties is going, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the average, yes. Not the average Tyrod Taylor.
If his name was Ty Rack, I feel like he would have had a better.
Right. And so we would have also made a lot of Iraq puns at this point, too, I think, but much to our detriment.
Anyway, let's continue with the conversation.
Yes, we'll keep it flowing. Yes, I absolutely think the Bills win this game because, you know, he look at how he's performed in really every game that involves a team not called the Patriots. He was kind of subpar for a half against Tennessee, but really picked it up at the end. The most glaring Tyrod stat for me, and Scott was talking about the passing yards, let's look at the rushing. 4 attempts, 1 yard. That is not Tyrod-like, and there were numerous times on Twitter I said, you know, I noted that the read option was open for him when he kept the ball. If he would have just kept the ball more instead of giving it to McCoy, he could have popped off at least 10 to 15 yards on one or two of those, and that makes a big difference in the game. If his accuracy is there on just one or two of those deep balls, it changes the course of the game. If he is, you know, even he fumbled the ball in the last drive. He didn't have very, I think he has better pocket presence than that usually. And that cost the Bills about 95 seconds based on the referees talking about the situation to us, which we very much appreciated while the clock was running. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a bold statement or not, but I think absolutely the way the defense played an average Tyrod, and we're talking about a 6-4 Bills team.
I think the average Tyrod doesn't win the game. I think we lose 20-17 or 23-20. I think it's not for any reason other than I think the Patriots were going to win this football game. I think you needed good Tyrod. I think you needed an upper echelon Tyrod game as opposed to an average game. And I think that's in part because you don't really know how the Patriots would have responded if they had been punched in the mouth a little harder. For me, I look at this and I think there were a lot of missed opportunities, and you can beat yourself up and definitely think, oh, well, they could have won that game. And I guess they could have. I just think that it might have taken a little bit more effort than it looks like it should have. So everyone should feel good because they weren't going to win anyway.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of the $64,000 kind of second question, and I would say I agree a little bit more with Frank. Is in that, you know, I think we score more points, maybe, and I think at the end of the day, the play calling was such that they were definitely trying to get the run game going, and then having and they were going to stick with that as long as they were allowed to. So at the end of the day, the way we call our games, Tyrod is not put in a position where he's going to win or to lose it on his own. It's really going to be as much about the run game. In this particular game, because he played so poorly, it's a little easier to put the finger at him. The follow-up question, which is kind of the interesting one, is if how good does Tyrod need to play for us to then beat the Patriots? Because, you know, Paul, if we take your answer at face value, you would suggest that if average Tyrod played in a average way in the next game time we see the Patriots, and let's hope it's in the playoffs, that would be enough to win the game.
I think it would if the defense plays like it did last night, which my issue is that it's probably not going to happen. I think the offense of the Patriots adjusts, steps up, gets some bodies back, and obviously this is a very theoretical scenario, but I think even if Tyrod plays like average Tyrod in that scenario, we do not get what to me was what you referred to, Scott, and I agree, is the best defensive performance of the season by this team.
That is something to point out, too, in terms of the best defensive performance, in terms of, and that's something we'll talk about maybe more when we get to the Chiefs game, is hopefully has the defense turned a corner, maybe? Have they found their mojo? I mean, again, as I put on Facebook last night, just seeing Brady so frustrated and angry with his offensive line, with the Pats kind of shuffling their offensive line in an attempt to kind of figure out how to stop the Bills, that was a pleasant thing and shades of last year to a certain extent, and what I remember this defense playing like. So anyway, I think the last thing that we really haven't talked about completely with this game is the penalties and the officials' calls, that kind of thing. I don't want to go too much into it, but I think it was clearly something that came up on Facebook, and I think we owe it to the listeners to provide our comments on the penalties and the officials and all that crap. Let's start with Steven. Sure looked like that defensive pass interference on that first long pass to Hogan and on the second one, Toon. Didn't mind flags. Ref puts the flag away as surprised they weren't called. I agree, as previously stated. Let's see. Inadvertent whistles happen. I get that. Did the refs just make it all up? because we have a procedure for dealing with those irregularities. The whistle blew before the reception was made, with a flag on Ryan, and then they tried to make up call. Were you guys reading the post game commentary on from the refs on exactly what they said?
Yes, which hilariously, if you look at two of the one on the, should we talk about the inadvertent whistle or the Watkins out of bounds first?
Let's start with the whistle.
All right, the whistle. So here's what essentially, I'll describe this in the terms I essentially described on Twitter without looking back at my tweet deck. The officials realized they screwed the Patriots, and so then they then misapplied a rule that would aid them as much as possible. So when there was an inadvertent whistle, the ball was in the air. Listen to that 5,000 times. There is no doubt what happened there. What that right. has to be then, it's a dead ball. You replay the down. Instead, what happened is they pretended the whistle didn't come until after the ball was caught, so they spotted there, then add 15 yards for Ryan, which was questionable. I mean, not questionable that he did it, but questionable that have you ever seen that flagged? I've seen it when a coach has come out on the field.
Not without a warning.
Right. When if coach comes on the field or if coach gets in the face of an official, I've seen it happen. But the proper application would have been that. And I don't know, did you guys read about what's the gentleman's name? Line Judge Gary Arthur, the one who made the inadvertent whistle?
No, I didn't see that.
I'm looking at a CBS Sports report from September 14th of this year. He got he had to be carted off the field after Denver's 19-13 win over Baltimore earlier this year when he was accidentally hit from behind by a Ravens gunner headed downfield to cover the punt.
Oh, that was that guy.
He is 58 years old, dealt with a broken collarbone, 9 broken ribs, and a collapsed lung. And this was his second game back from that injury. And the speculation is when the action started to come over toward the sideline and then Ryan got up near him, he got shaken, as one does when in a similar situation one suffered a broken collarbone, 9 broken ribs, and a collapsed lung 2 months earlier.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, okay.
I'd be a little gun-shy there. Sure. Okay. I think that's pretty clearly, I mean, obviously the refs are not admitting that. Their story was that the whistle blew after Amendola had possession, and therefore it was dead ball at Amendola's reception. But I think it was clear that, I mean, they would have, it was there's something called groupthink, which is when no one really has a great idea what to do, the first person to kind of throw out a theory
right.
kind of goes along with it, and, I could very much see this kind of being a bit of referee groupthink in that someone was like, well, we completely screwed the Patriots. I think it was possible that Amendola had caught it by then. Maybe he caught it by then, and let's just do that. And then everyone was like, yeah, sure, let's just do that. And no one actually spoke up and said, come on, guys, now we're just making one mistake worse. An honest mistake, by the way, and that's something I think Desmond made a very good point on, was that this was inadvertent whistles happen. Shit happens. Like, it's happened to the Patriots. It's happened to the Bills. Plenty of random stuff has hurt, and it's not really anyone's fault. It's just this is a game with humans, and occasionally you get screwed. And this would have been one of those times where the Patriots just got screwed, and instead they kind of took it upon themselves to kind of even out the screwing. And, yeah, that's unfortunate.
That's the other thing. Like, if they had just said, okay, we're going to allow the catch, but not come up with the extra 15 yards, that would have sort of been like
a screwing the Patriots too, because they would have called it dead at the spot, right?
Right, but it would have been like much more palatable because you'd have been like, all right, I guess they're just, you know, it was like, it wasn't exactly right, but it wasn't like this huge, you know, crazy boondock. They made it much worse.
Seems like they're making it a makeup call.
Yes, exactly.
Things that should not happen, but obviously often do.
Right.
And then Stephen also brought up the clock still has 2 seconds on it, which I think we could all say we agree with.
Absolutely.
And the official story from the refs was that, from their perspective, Sammy had given himself up on the field of play, which, if you look at the replays, is borderline impossible, as he was basically headed out of bounds the moment he caught the ball.
Right.
I don't know what you say to that.
I think the two concepts that we skip when the referee makes the judgment call is apparently that judgment call is not based on two factors known as logic and context. So you have a player with the clock expiring on the team that is down by 7 points. He is not going to – why would he give himself up on the field under any scenario? Obviously what he is trying to do is get out of bounds, preserve the clock as much as he could. His backing up was not him trying to surrender himself. It was him trying to get out of bounds so as to avoid a Patriots player bringing him down in the field of play. So it was exactly the opposite of giving yourself up in the field of play. It was trying to get the hell off the field so you can live to see another play.
Or you could, you know, read it as everybody who runs out of bounds is giving themselves up in some manner, right? it's a bit like
Stoner's explanation on that, basically. That's the level you're going to there is like, right. Oh, man, but when you think about it in this concept, man, I mean, no, it's
well,
you're right.
Like every wide receiver that runs back a few steps to try and make some more yards isn't giving himself up. Like, it's the exact same thing. It was a ridiculous... And it just made me feel like they wanted to get out of there. Like they were, like they decided the game was over, and they didn't want to see another play. And they had had enough of figuring stuff out and judiciary, and they were just like, "Nope, that's it." And that's just like, it's gross.
We don't want to have to do this Hail Mary pass,
right? And it's gross, not just because like Buffalo got screwed out of like, you know, their shot at a miracle throw, but because like. Games are supposed to have rules, and there's supposed to be a certain amount of fairness, and part of the underlining structure of what makes sport fun is that there's like some semblance of a level playing field, and that there is some semblance of structure as to how the game is played. And when that is broken, it just becomes WWE. I mean, it's like you might as well be rooting for people to get hit with chairs and complaining about that the writers didn't do a good job. And... that to me is the bigger issue. Is like this is you have
the writers did do a terrible job yesterday, by the way. No
they
doubt
did. They, like it was totally, you know, you could see it coming. We had seen this episode 1,000 times, and it wasn't any good from that perspective. But it's just you can't have that. You can't have people. You can't first of all have it feel that way, and second of all, there's a real problem with the fact that. Every exciting play that happens, you have to wait 5 or 6 minutes to figure out if you're allowed.
Excited about, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, it was gross.
The whole game, the whole did you guys read about that official as well?
No.
There was a report on him. You, I did
were,
a lot
were
of
you on like, Steam?
I know, I spent a lot of time on the can today. No.
He was on officials official.com or whatever.
This official was last year a Pac-10 official. And mistakenly applied
yes.
the college rule.
Yes, I did hear that. Someone says, yeah.
Sammy would have surrendered himself, gone out of bounds, clock would have kept running no matter what. So he applied the Pac-10 rule on that play.
And again, that's another kind of group, and I think that might be something that the Avenue, I'm going to go sell this to the NFL right now, is I'm going to have the referees go to groupthink training. Because again, that would be one of the ones where the referee would have to come over and be like, no, that's a fuck up, you fucked up. It's okay. It's going to happen. We're all going to fuck up. But it's my responsibility to not allow that to happen, to speak up and say, no, that was wrong. We're going to fix this now. Let's move on.
And you just had a college, the NCAA, admit like they screwed up a really important game and someone should have won a football game and they didn't.
That happens all the time.
Right, but like they finally said, like, yeah, you know what? I forget which team it was, but like they should have won. This is on the heels of... you know, the Bills at the beginning of the season sort of being considered like one of like these like an outlaw like team with all these penalties they were racking up and like a sea of controversial calls. Mike Tirico was complaining about the officiating at the end of the game. Like he's like paid millions of dollars to, you know, call the football. He's supposed to be, you know,
chill for the NFL.
He is, and he probably is happy to, but it was sort of. You know,
so atrocious that he couldn't even.
Yeah, it's really bad, and they have a problem, and I don't know what the problem is because it seems like the worst thing you could do would be to add more layers of officiating.
Yeah, no, that's what they've done in an attempt with the instant replay, and right. That's Belichick's solution is to basically review everything. But then it's like, you know, as people said, all right, well then let's just play one game on Sunday afternoon because it's going to take 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I will take one. Alibi, as I call them sometimes, on the inadvertent whistles thing. I will also say this. Tom Brady, as usual, early on in the game, bitching every time he gets hit,
mm-hmm.
complaining to the refs every single time. Doesn't matter how he gets hit, when he gets hit, you know, a second late, 2 seconds late, when he's in the process of throwing, before he's thrown the ball, complaining to the refs, trying to work them, trying to get flags. To the refs' credit, they did not bow to his pressure, as I've seen other refs do. And mm-hmm. to be fair, I think that's probably a little bit why he had an inadvertent whistle, was someone saw Tom Brady headed for the sideline and was like, okay, Tom Brady's headed for the sideline. Let's not make sure he gets hit.
Yeah, whistle. I think so.
And Brady flipped it downfield, and that's a little bit on you, Tom. I'm just going to say it.
I was kind of guys. I liked Jerry Hughes launching his shoulder into his chest and knocking him back. That's one where you'd have an official say, oh, I'm going to consider that leaving your feet to hit a quarterback or do this. But the official, God bless him on that play, recognized, oh, that's a clean hit. That's what you're supposed to. You're supposed to drive in with your shoulder, turn your head away so you're not leading with your head, and so there's no helmet-to-helmet contact.
I think it was Brady move.
Officials just let him. The Bills hit him what? It was something like 20 times. Did I read again? And no roughing the passer calls.
And Bradham hit him on the Rambo non-interception. And when he took like two steps towards the ball, and he's like, "Oop, you're going to make the tackle," and he knocked him. It was kind of good.
That was good. And then one more officiating thing before we get into three stars, where Jerry Hughes is not, and that's a shame because Jerry Hughes had a great game.
He did have a good game. Yeah.
He had a really he was probably the best. Darius played a great game too. Frank, are you alive?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep, no, we can hear you.
Just sounded like you passed out. Darius played a really awesome game too, completely abusing the interior of the pass line, but Hughes played a great game as well and stayed with Pronk on at least two of those passes, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. But going to quickly the Chandler situation, as I referenced earlier in the intro,
The
rule is that technically it's something called a simulated substitution when someone runs onto the field and runs back off before they get to the before they actually get to the huddle. But if they don't make it to the numbers, it is not technically a position where the defense would be allowed to substitute accordingly, and the umpire would stand on the ball to keep that from happening. I think that's kind of a BS rule. Obviously, I think the Pats kind of got away with one, and people also have argued that it should have been unabated to the quarterback because Hughes was running back towards Tom Brady when the play started, and normally that would be unabated, and then it would be blown dead at the spot. Regardless, how the Bills could be fooled again by the Patriots doing the things they've seen them do 100 times, I'm not really sure. And not to mention the fact, again, the Pats on the 6-yard line, they're probably going to freaking score. It's not that's a low leverage play, if you ask me. So it's not something to get completely destroyed about.
Right. But good in the context of, let's talk about how terrible the officials are. It's a perfect example.
Yes, another example of how terrible they were. And the PIs were arguably as bad as any of those calls from my perspective. So I will say we will go to three stars now, and I will do three stars because it's my segment, and I will do them now. You will listen.
We shut up. We're waiting for you. Unless we're going to go with that. You talked about earlier, like, podcasts are good with talking. I think we need to try. You guys have obviously never listened to 90 Minutes of Silence podcast. It's good stuff. Great bold, times.
The bold choice.
Yes.
It's a new form we're experimenting with. It's just empty air. Probably more pleasing for some listeners.
Yes. Empty air, otherwise known as, oh, shit, we forgot a segue.
You guys, this podcast is running longer than the game now. So
yeah, we got to the Chiefs. I'm going to shut up, Scott, those three stars.
We're not, there's not much to talk about beyond this, honestly. We're just going to go on to the Chiefs game this day's Bills history. After three stars, your honorable mention is Sammy Watkins for one play, which was unbelievable and the best play of the night.
I was saying by myself, I just shook my head. I thought, I don't know how to have a reaction to that. I can't even conceive of how that catch is made.
Yeah, that's obviously not as important as the Beckham catch from last year because it was, he was going into the end zone, if I recall.
Yep.
And obviously he was diving at the time, but as far as I'm concerned, diving and running are basically the same. Watkins was running at full speed. He snagged that ball out of the air with one hand and a guy on top of him. So, yeah, that gets you honorable mention, that alone. Third star, and I have these written down, I gave it to Amendola. You could have basically put in New England wide receiver because someone was going to have 9 catches for 117 yards, and Edelman was hurt. So it was going to be Amendola. Again, not a normal game. Gronkowski and Brady are not on your 3-stars list, which is usually it's – I don't think we've done this and we pay the Patriots that not one of them is on. But as far as I'm concerned, Amendola had a better game than either one of them. And, you know, again, doing Danny Amendola things, just getting open on little third downs and just enough to keep the chains moving. You know, one or two plays where he gets out in the open, obviously had the one kind of called back or he wasn't able to run on the inadvertent whistle, but a good game from him overall. Your second star, LeSean McCoy, 20 carries, 82 yards and a touchdown. Also 6 catches for 41 yards. Basically, another unbelievable game from McCoy. You know, again, the Bills' offense with Tyrod clearly not in the right state of mind, not making his deep throws, completely dependent on him. Carlos not really effective on his 6 carries for 11 yards. Carlos, I will say, was effective on lead blocker on some of those, so that wrinkle that we kind of put in this week more than I've seen it in other weeks with both of them in the backfield. LeSean, however, was the one who kind of basically put the whole offense on his back and was most of the reason that we scored points in this game. So, yeah, he's the second star. And your first star, I gave it to a New England defender, and that was Rob Ninkovich. I think he got one earlier in this year. It was kind of just a team effort from New England, as it frequently is. They do have good players on this defense. Dante Hightower is a good player. I think Malcolm Butler is probably not as good as everyone says he is, but I think he's probably a decent corner at the end of the day. Easley's good. Chandler Jones is good. Good for Cordy Glenn for showing up today. He did not show up, obviously, the first time we played. But Ninkovich did his job in Bill Belichick's kind of words. 6 tackles, 1.5 sacks. And another QB hit in on top of that. So, and obviously the huge fumble forced at the end of the game that basically cost the Bills about 45 seconds and 6 or 7 yards. Right. It would have been very hard for the Bills, even if Watkins gets out of bounds with 2 seconds, you're still looking at a Hail Mary's chance in terms of winning that game, partly because Ninkovich was able to beat Chantrell Henderson again and force the fumble.
Which Ryan and I were discussing on Twitter, I believe it was Ryan and I were talking about how terrible Chantrell was, and he suggested, essentially, hey, off-season's coming up, have Robert Woods go on a diet whereby he gains 100 pounds. Move him to right tackle, we're all set. And his catches per game won't even go down that much.
At this point, that would seem to make sense. He was pretty awesome on some of those blocks, and he's been doing it for a couple games now. And he was not in sync with Tyrod last night, so I think that makes sense. Let's see. So those are your 3 stars. And I think now we will go to, why don't we do, Paul, do you have this day in Bills history?
I do have this day in Bills history. I did want to give a quick shout out to, you know, all the people who were interacting with me last night. Orlando and I talked a lot more than we usually do. He also had a great analogy just about how it's like, you know, looking at an eclipse, essentially, or looking at the sun. You know, watching that game. You know how it's going to, you know what's happening. You can't look away, though. So kudos to him. Kudos to, you know, Steven, Ryan, Isaac, you know, 3 new followers we got during the course of the game last night. James, of course, we're always chatting. Tom is old school at this point. We're always chatting. So just thanks to all of you. So, and Reza. How could I forget Reza? So on to this day in Bills history. And Brian, all right, now I'm done. I promise I'm done with the shout-outs. So this day in Bills history, I'm going to really make you guys stretch your memories on this one. We are going to go all the way back to, I don't know if you remember the year 2014. You know, you really want to go back to...
I'll have no excuse not to know this one.
Jeez. Yes. November 24th, 2014. Monday Night Football, because the Bills stadium had been snowed in. So, the Bills go on to face the New York Football Jets. And this is good to keep this segment short because I'm not really going to go into the depth in this game. Needless to say, you know, I think the Bills were only like a 3-point or 2-point favorite or something after beating the Jets in New York, 43-23. I remember sitting in a bar in Albany watching this game, and the guy next to me, I watched most of it from the room, and I went down at the end to have dinner, And the guy next to me is like, man, I wish I hadn't put money on the Jets. And I'm like, well, your fault. So the Bills just dominated this game beginning to end. The final score of this one was 38-3. I have not looked up a trivia question on this one yet because I was thinking I was going to spend more time on it. But as I looked at it, I'm like, no, we remember this one very well. You know, I don't need to necessarily go into the recap of the game. But, yep, 38-3, this was the last time the Bills would face Rex Ryan before Rex returned to Buffalo, if you will. By returned, I mean, I'll come to Buffalo for the first time to coach football. So returned was the absolute wrong word. All right, so I suppose I should come up with a trivia question on this one. What do I want to make it?
You should just pick a player.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to pick one that's not as obvious.
And we'll try and guess. They must have, you know,
maybe,
just...
Maybe do an easy one for the listeners this time, Paul, because I feel like sometimes these are really, you know, you do a great job of picking them, and I feel like the listeners probably get, like, go, like, 0-16 at some point.
Yeah.
Like, they're just not going to hit some of these people. So maybe give them an easy one, and then we can move on towards the Chiefs game, which is obviously hugely important.
Right. So
and again... Not to foreshadow, I already know the answer.
So. All right.
Everything about this game, I remember.
Here's this very interesting, well-researched question. This Bills tight end left the game with a knee injury.
This Bills tight end left the game with a knee injury. Frank?
I think you should go first this time, Scott.
Okay, all right. So I'll let Frank think about it. Frank sometimes needs a little more time on these, so I'll just throw it out there. You know, obviously, you know, he doesn't have to go with what I say, but, you know, again, this was not that hard. Ashley Tisdale.
Absolutely.
Actress, singer, producer, spokesperson, model. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, she was tight end for a little while last year. I think she was cut by the end of the season.
That's a bit offensive, actually, and I really don't think she appreciates you calling her that, Scott.
That was a little too easy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Frank, do you want to go, and then I can try and think of another guest, just in case it's that not Ashley Tisdale? That's the real reason we started doing these, in case people don't know.
To look up Ashley Tisdale?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, thank for an excuse to go to Google Images. So, mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
I think I know the answer this time, and I do try and get them right. So I'm going to say Scott Chandler, who is the only tight end I can think of, and it would be a great answer because he's no longer on the team and is a jerk and sucked at his job.
I was going to say Chandler, too, actually. If it was either him or Lee Smith, I would assume, and I don't, again, Lee getting injured in his 10 snaps would be too hard, but...
All right, well, these, you were close. Their birthdays are only 2 days apart. Ashley Tisdale's, and the correct answer, Mr. Chris Gregg.
Oh, Chris Gregg.
How did we all miss that? Oh, my God. I'm so bad at this game.
To be fair, this was 365 days ago now. So,
that's true.
You know,
I guess, I mean, it is, and it's not like Chris Gregg's absence would be normally notable. It's not like
right.
He did complain about a pass interference call yesterday, or lack thereof, when it wasn't a pass interference call. It was the one call officials may have gotten right, actually.
Exactly, yeah. So, that is your This Day in Bills History for, what is it, November 24th?
Mm-hmm. Yep, 2015. It was 2014, so yep.
Exactly. We will now move on to, I think, the Chiefs game. And thank you to some other people who commented. James did as well. Brian didn't watch the game. So I don't know why you're chiming in.
I think he watched some of it, though, because he was tweeting with me for a little bit, and then he dropped off face of the earth when he realized he valued sleep. Whereas, what did Tom tell me? It was 3:30 in the morning when he was watching, and that was earlier in the game. So kudos to Tom, who clearly did nothing at work today.
Yeah, so let's move on to the Chiefs game. As Frank pointed out with the playoff simulator last week, a crucial game, obviously much more so now that the Patriots have beaten the Bills to go to 10-0 and basically will clinch the division next week if they can beat, I believe, Brock Osweiler-led Denver Broncos is their next game. So the Bills will make the playoffs in a 63% chance. They have a 63% chance of making the playoffs based on 19,000 simulations, according to the New York Times, if they beat the Chiefs next week. However, if they lose to the Chiefs, the Bills will only make the playoffs in 20. Well, it was 22% a little while ago. Now it's 16%.
Well, thank God we haven't lost to the Chiefs in consecutive seasons in huge turning point games in November. Thank God that that hasn't happened.
Exactamundo. So this obviously is a very critical game. I can break down a little of it, and then maybe you guys can talk about some things that you're looking for in this game.
Sure.
I would say the Chiefs are obviously a very trendy pick to make the playoffs at this point, not only because they're currently in the playoff picture based on their conference record, if I recall, but also because they have won four games in a row, and because the teams they have lost to this year are the Broncos with Peyton Manning, 31-24, a 7-point loss to those Broncos in week two, then a 10-point loss to the Packers at Green Bay, a 15-point loss to the Bengals at Cincinnati, a home loss to the Bears, kind of a puzzler, and one that I believe cost me a Survivor League at one point, 18-17 at home, and then losing to the, I believe, 7-3 Vikings, 16-10 at the Vikings. They have since gone on to beat the Steelers, Lions, Broncos, and Chargers, and now they face the Bills.
Right, and people have talked about their easy schedule the rest of the way. Look at what they've had to deal with at the beginning of the season. To come out 5-5 is pretty decent.
Exactly, and just so people know, that is another reason they're picking Kansas City to go well. They will go at the Raiders, which is obviously they'll have two games left with the Raiders, which are obviously going to be huge for the wild card. But then, other than that, they have home versus a terrible Chargers team at a Ravens team that was bad, and then they just lost their starting quarterback. And now, and then the other game, of course, home versus the Cleveland Browns, who are probably going to be starting, I don't know, Ara Parsemian at quarterback. So yeah, the Chiefs, they're probably going to make the playoffs. The question is, can the Bills make the playoffs, and will they beat them on Sunday? So, Paul or Frank, why don't we start with Frank?
See, I don't know that they are going to. I don't think that they are likely if Buffalo wins, because I think Pittsburgh's kind of in the other driver's seat, and really, this game is going to be about that last spot. You know, it's not that they can't catch. It's not that they can't catch Pittsburgh for the five spot. I'm just saying, like, this is kind of the make-or-break game of the season, really. If I remember right, the New York Times simulators basically said if they lose this game to the Chiefs but still get 10 wins, then they probably will still make the playoffs. Buffalo can still make the playoffs basically by running the table the rest of the game, winning the last 5 weeks. But I'm not really sure what to expect. The Chiefs are 4-point favorites at home by a couple of pages. That seems about right to me. They seem like they're at, which, you know, mostly playing in Arrowhead is the issue. And the other thing that's holding me up is I don't know Tyrod Taylor's situation. I think if they play the same game they just played against the Patriots, they can beat the Chiefs. Like if that effort would in fact win a game in Arrowhead. So if they can do that, then I feel pretty good, and I kind of feel like that they're capable of that. So, but that is largely in my mind dependent on how well or how good Tyrod Taylor is feeling. Paul, do you?
Yeah, I would. I concur. My concern is that they will have difficulty playing as well as they did against the Patriots, simply because the law of averages and the fact that you're coming off a short rest, which Rex Ryan, for better or for worse, mentioned last night that the NFL mm-hmm. didn't do the Bills any favors on that. And it is, you know, Chiefs are relatively healthy. I know as far as the recent injuries go, I know the running back West got hurt with a hamstring injury in his day-to-day. Tom Ali's been on the injury report in recent weeks, but he's been probable and he's played. And they're such a good defense. And, you know, who knows if Tyrod even plays, if he's going to be at full strength. This is a tall order for Buffalo, but I will say this. If they don't win this game, it's unlikely they deserve that playoff spot. Mm-hmm. If they can go into Kansas City and win and be a game above 500, 11 games into the season, I will be very pleased with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the key thing is, you know, this is the type of games that playoff teams should win. I mean, again, it's on the road, so it's going to be a little tougher than it normally would be. I think, you know, I looked briefly at Pittsburgh's rest of the schedule just so I can combat Frank's point. there, Pittsburgh goes at Seattle, home versus the Colts, at the Bengals, home versus the Broncos, at the Ravens, at the Browns. So two wins definitely for the Steelers. Yeah. Definitely two wins for the Steelers at the end, but at the Seahawks and at the Bengals, that's probably two L's right there for Pittsburgh. So anyway, but we'll see. I'm very concerned about this game. You know, I think Kansas City has a lot of talent. Whether it's Dontari Poe or Justin Houston or Derek Johnson, Tom Ali, again, hopefully, you know, he's healthy in the long term. If he doesn't play on Sunday, that would not be the end of the world. Ron Parker, pretty decent safety. Marcus Peters, who basically is the guy who is keeping Ronald Darby from winning Defensive Rookie of the Year outright. It's arguably because Marcus Peters has, is a rookie and playing maybe not if just as well, but has more interceptions than Darby does at this point. On offense, obviously, you know, they're not. They're still a running kind of driven team. Travis Kelce, obviously, good tight end. Alex Smith is Alex Smith. We all know what he can and cannot do. I think their offensive line is halfway decent. Ben Grubbs and Eric Fisher, kind of the highlights there. This is a tough game for me to kind of predict. Again, I think Frank pointed out a week or two ago, when you're picking these games, to a certain extent, with the exception of last week's Patriots game, you're kind of picking the Bills season to end or go on. And that's why I don't want to pick the Chiefs. But I think it's just too much. I think, you know, if Tyrod played really well on New England, that would give me a little more hope. I think it's harder for me than normal because Tyrod is such an X factor and has proven that he can basically put the team on his back, and he might be still the quarterback who can take us to the promised land, so to speak. But at the end of the day, I also don't know that he's going to do it this week against a good Kansas City defense on the road. And I don't know that our defense is going to do enough to put us in front. So I'll say Chiefs 17-13.
All right. I'll go next just so Frank gets... I feel like poor Frank always has to go first on the pick. So, you know, I will... You know, I'm going to sadly have to agree with Scott. I want us... It's one of those where, you know, in hindsight, you know, looking back on the game yesterday, really proud of the effort of the defense, ashamed to waste it. Is that an omen of things to come for this defense, or are they going to naturally regress somewhat after playing, you know, the game that they played last night? I think going on the road in Arrowhead against an extremely solid team in the Kansas City Chiefs, it's hotter than any team in the NFL right now. I just think it's going to be too much. I think two of us picked the Patriots by 7 this week, which proved very prescient because we were right. And that beat the spread of 7.5. So I am going to say the Bills will beat the spread again. But I just think the Chiefs are, you know, it's going to be a tough, tough task. I'm going to say 26-23 Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having a hard time.
Pick with your heart. That'll at least make it a little more diverse.
This is a tough one.
What was our crazy scenario on this one? I got to look that up.
Yeah, I forget. Was it that Ashley Tisdale was playing for the Chiefs?
No, that's
different. That's not
right. Oh, teams drink one beer per quarter.
Okay.
Which, yeah, for the record, Frank and I picked a tie, and Scott went with the Chiefs.
Ooh, maybe I should pick the tie. Maybe, yeah. That's kind of what I'm feeling.
That would be apropos.
I think. All right, I'll pick the Bills to win. I will. I'll pick the Bills to win.
All right.
And I think it's going to be like 12-10. I think it's going to be like just a terrible football game.
Slugfest. Okay.
And it's going to be a slugfest. Tom rightly pointed out that this game might be won in the trenches. And we don't have very good trenches, but we have good running backs in those trenches. And so I'm gonna go with the running game here and I can't pick the Bills season to end yet, so 12-10 Buffalo.
Okay. We Scott and I very much hope we're wrong and you're right.
Agreed. Yeah. Yes. No, I think you know, it'll be a very interesting game. I don't think when I say interesting, I mean it'll be close, and I don't think either one of these teams is built to run away from each other. I think I do agree it probably will end up as a bit of a rock fight. But we will find out on Sunday, and we will find out who wins that game. We will find out who else wins on Sunday to determine what else happens in the rest of the playoff picture, and that'll help crystallize exactly what the Bills need to do the rest of the way to get to the playoffs and break the longest streak in the four major professional sports of playoff-lessness. If you want to get in contact with us and talk about the playoffs or not the playoffs or the Bills or anything else, feel free to do that. You can find us on Facebook at Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, BBillsNAY. You can Google us, BBillsMNY, or Bills Podcast, and scroll down. You will find us. You can email us at bbillsmny@gmail.com. You can find our WordPress blog where we have two articles and a bunch of podcasts at wordpress.com/bbillsmny. I always get that wrong.
bbillsmny.wordpress.com.
That's the one. And then always Paul tweeting at bbillsmny. So, any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, we you know, it was. I'm hoping against hope on Sunday. I will be tweeting up a storm and praying that we. Let's put it this way: if they win next week, I think we'll be optimistic. At that point in the season, the latest point of the season we've been since we've known each other. And if they lose, I think we genuinely need to acknowledge, like, not going to be the year this year.
Okay.
It'll be an exciting. It'll be exciting to talk about one way or the other, or depressing as shit.
So stay tuned next week.
Yeah.
Someone say something uplifting, please. Let's not end on that.
But the podcast goes on regardless.
Yes.
Unless World War III happens and we're all dead.
Oh, don't say that. God. It's just, everything sucks, and it shouldn't.
That's it for B-Bills.
Happy Thanksgiving. Everything sucks.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Exactly. I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
I'm Paul.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, you suck. Oh, wait, I've got to hit stop. See, even that sucks.
Oh, yeah, we're still on the air.
Okay, here we go.